The black rain is falling, contaminating the ground. The human race is dying, the dead are scattered around.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. You can now hear Great Speeches and Interviews at 96.5 FM in the Sacramento area. Today's program is a call to action. President Jimmy Carter talks about human rights abuses against women around the world and discusses what can be done about the problem.
point out just now that actually those don't have much to do with religion. And what I'm interested in is knowing about religion and different faiths. Is there a faith, a particular faith, that oppresses women more than another?
The last time I was in Myanmar, which used to be Burma, and I've been there before, I always make a practice of meeting with the religious leaders. And they are, the eastern part of Myanmar is next to China, and a majority of people there are Christians. And in the northwestern corner near Bangladesh, a lot of them are Muslims, but most of them are Buddhists. And I meet with the leaders so that I can try to discourage the abuse by the Buddhists, who are a majority of the others. And all the men around the table will tell me, they're all men, the leaders of these different denominations, that they treat women equally. And then they pause for a few minutes and say, but differently. And it differently means that a woman is not legally abused because she's a woman, but she's not given equal opportunity to serve God in their own perspective of God. So I think that this kind of abuse takes place all over the world by selective excerpts from whatever religious text you use to cement yourself with the worshipped figure that is God in our case.
Mr. President, I've been traveling as a journalist in the Middle East since 1980 and keep going back. But one of the memories that I have that's strong is from 1981, after the assassination of Anwar Sadat, with whom you worked so courageously and effectively on the Camp David agreement. And an Egyptian said to me, after Sadat had been killed, that it was shameful that Anwar Sadat let his wife, Jihan, dance with Jimmy Carter. It brought dishonor on Muslims. A remarkable comment. But what it leads me to ask you is, when we hear things like that, that are so outside our cultural experience, how should we deal with them? Did it ever occur to you, when you asked Jihan Sadat to dance at the White House, that you might be giving deep offense to Muslims back home? Should you worry about that? How do we deal with this problem, really, deep down, of different cultures where we may be giving offense much greater than we realize by our actions?
Well, if that person had asked me that, I would have said, well, Anwar danced with my wife first. But but one of the things that I mentioned in the book quite extensively, the Carter Center's had programs all over the world. And we have found out, to my discomfiture sometimes, that when I, as a well-meaning Westerner, go into a local African community and start criticizing the people about the basic civil human rights of their daughters not to be circumcised, I find that it's counterproductive, that it's much better for me to stay quiet and to let maybe our staff and so forth work with women in those committees and let in those communities and let the women decide on their own that they shouldn't circumcise their daughters. But for an outsider, particularly a Westerner who's a Christian, to go into a Muslim rural area and start telling the people, we know how to live, you should change your policies, it's worse than not doing anything. And I think the best thing for us Americans to do is to look at our own country. Because here in this great country, we commit a lot of the crimes against women that I describe in this book. I'll just give you two examples very quickly if we have time. And that is two of the most revered institutions in America, the great university system and the military. I teach at Emory University. And if you go to any university in this country, including the deeply religious universities, they have horrendous abuse of women on the campuses. Sexual abuse on the campuses is horrendous. And it's not ever reported unless the women overcome the objection of the president of the university and the deans, who discourage any legalization of a rape. And a few boys on the campus that are inclined toward rape, when they get to be a university student, they know that they can do it and get away with it. Only 4% of the sexual assaults on the campuses are even reported. And very few of those ever result in punishment of the rapist. The same thing happens in our military. There were statistics that were evolved in 2012. 26,000 sexual abuses in the military, about 300 resulted in punishment of the rapist. That's about 1%. So, you know, we don't even want to address that. And the Congress, you know, recently tried to remove the control of commanding officers from deciding which one of those cases should be tried, and failed. the commanding officers still have control, and the same thing applies on university campuses where presidents of the universities, no matter how enlightened they are, they don't want to bring discredit on their university. They don't want to allege or let the world know that under their leadership, sexual abuse still takes place. So we need to correct our own problems here at home before we look overseas.
Does that mean that when we're talking about our foreign policy and we're dealing with a country like Saudi Arabia, which
yes.
does oppress women, aren't allowed to drive, they have to cover up, they have to be escorted by
and
a male.
And they can't vote, and they have voted in Saudi.
And they can't vote. Do we just overlook that? I mean, you were in the forefront of the human rights movement early on, and obviously this is a human rights issue throughout the world. So how do we deal with our allies who are in fact oppressing women? And is there a line that we draw where we say this is not acceptable?
Well, in some cases, I think a passage of a law through the United Nations Security Council can have teeth in it and really result in direct action being taken. And Angelina Jolie and the Foreign Minister of Great Britain are working as partners now to try to resolve the problem of rape in war zones. And they're being very effective because their foreign minister goes to meetings of the United Nations Security Council and others, and they get laws passed that you impose punishment on people where the crime is committed. The United States passed a law a few years ago referring to the International Violence Against Women Act, AVAWA, and we didn't go all the way, but we did pass enough to require the State Department to assess every year the degree of slavery that exists still in the world. And slavery is much more prevalent now than it ever was during the 19th century. It amounts to about $32 billion a year. And the last report that I read from the State Department, which is the last one they issued, by the way, they estimate that 800,000 persons are sold across international borders every year into slavery, and that 80% of those are girls being sold into sexual servitude. In the United States, they estimated, this is the State Department figures, that 100,000 girls are sold into slavery in this country. And Atlanta, by the way, is the number one trade post for this sexual slavery. We have over 200 girls sold every month in Atlanta because we have the greatest airport, the busiest airport on earth, and we get our passengers more from the southern hemisphere than, say, New York or Washington would or Chicago. And you can buy a girl in the South for about $1,000, a pimp can or a brothel owner. Whereas if you get a girl from Europe or from Eastern Europe, she costs between $2,000 and $8,000. And so most of the servitude in this country that relates to women is for the sexual trade. And we don't do anything in this country about prostitution. And a lot of people assume, well, all of the prostitutes want to be prostitutes. They don't. They're put in there and then they're enslaved until later. And we don't do anything about it. In fact, there's not a house of prostitution or a brothel or a whorehouse in America that the officials in that city don't know about it being operated. And the local police obviously know it because they walk back and forth across the street. So the police are either bribed or they look the other way or they're given free sexual privileges. And I know that prostitution is the oldest sin and that sort of thing, but Sweden, for instance, that I've mentioned in my book quite extensively, Sweden has tried an experiment that works. It works now for about 8 years, and other countries in Europe are emulating Sweden. What they do is they make a crime to have a brothel, to be a brothel owner, or to be a pimp, or to be a male customer of a female prostitute. They don't punish the prostitutes. And this, in our country, we do just the opposite. There are 50 times as many prostitutes arrested in America as are brothel owners or pimps and practically no male customers. And the Swedish model has really worked. So we just don't want to change the present situation. And I hope that this book and other things will help to correct those problems.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. We'll be right back.
soft soap. They sent us paper. They gave us Bob Hope. We dug in deep and shot on sight and prayed to Jesus Christ with all of our might. We had no cameras to shoot the landscape. We passed the hash pipe and played our doors tapes. And it was dark, so dark at night, night, night. And we held on to each other like brother to brother. We promised our mothers we'd write.
And now back to Jimmy Carter talking about human rights abuses against women around the world.
Mr. President, I want to ask you about a problem you've been working on literally since the day you became president, which is the Israeli-Palestinian problem.
Yes.
It's one that's controversial. It's brought great controversy to you. Your recent book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, upset people, not least because of the title.
I heard about it.
I bet you did. But as you know, this administration is making that push for peace again. I'd have to say most of the pushing has been done by Secretary of State John Kerry.
Right.
And President Obama has been relatively uninvolved.
I noticed that.
And so I want to ask you to speak out about that. You were personally intensely involved in every minute of that peacemaking. And I'd like to ask you, what I take it you're dissatisfied with President Obama's lack of personal involvement. What should he do? And we really are on the edge now. This really is a make or break moment. What should he do to try to bring this dream you had back in the 1970s closer to being reality?
Well, I have fairly easy access with the Secretary of State. John Kerry has been a personal friend, and I pretty well agreed with things before he became Secretary of State. In fact, the morning of President Obama's second inauguration, John Kerry and his wife came to my hotel room, and we spent about two hours as a matter of accuracy, talking about international affairs. This is one of them. As you know, President Obama had played very little role then except to make a speech, beautiful speech in Cairo, and then he later said the 67 borders should prevail with minor modifications. But then he had been pretty well quiet about it.
Men of anger, men of war, my heart is filled with love. Tell me what you are fighting for. My heart is filled with love. This death I see won't make me numb. My heart is filled with love. Every boy, a mother, son, my heart is filled with love. Raise your voices, spread the news. My heart is filled with love. Buddhist, Christian, Muslim, Jew, my heart is filled. Them do. My heart is filled with love. I will not fear these foreign tongues. My heart is filled with love. There is a place for everyone.
Messages from Access Sacramento.